Geche, Ayaag, Bezendaya, our elders, listen to them, focuses on personal histories of our Ojibwe elders of Minnesota. This program includes personal historic knowledge of the changes they've experienced in Indian country and beyond. Geche Ayaag Bezendaya includes the changes they've seen due to the federal Indian policy as well as state policy. This program targets villages and communities within the boundaries of the White Earth Indian Reservation and beyond to other Ojibwe reservations in our state. Geche Ayaag Bezendaya, our elders, listen to them.
Clyde Howard Belcourt is a White Earth Ojibwe civil rights organizer noted for co-founding the American Indian Movement, or AIM, in 1968. Clyde was born on May 8, 1936, and he was the seventh of 12 children born to his parents, Charles and Angeline Belcourt, on the White Earth Reservation in Minnesota. Here's part four of a four-part series.
The American Indian Movement, there were two ladies from Red Lake came approach me shortly after we formed, and we asked for a name because we didn't like Concerned Indian American Coalition, acronym CIA. So we knew we had to change that.
Sure.
And so I asked the community to do that. Sure enough, one night I was coming into my office and a woman grabbed me by the shoulder. She was from Red Lake. Her name was Downwind, her last name. And she grabbed me by the sleeve. She says, "Why don't you just call it AIM?" I says, "What does that mean?" She says, "American Indian Movement." I said, "We don't want to call it Indian." Some pirate was 18,000 miles off his course and stumbled upon. And she says to me, she says, "Listen here, Sonny." She says, "Indians, what they use to oppress us, and Indians, what we're going to use to gain our freedom." I said, okay, let's go. So she went in and proposed it to our board, and the board voted unanimously to call it the American Indian Movement. So you're aiming to do something about education, you're aiming to do something about housing, aiming to do something about health, aiming to do something about all our children that have been stolen from us and fostered out and broken up, whole families broken up, never to see one another again. That's what we're going to call it. Okay. So that's how we become known as AIM. The elders, women, made that whole decision.
It's a perfect name.
Yeah.
AIM. What are some of the objectives of AIM?
We had a lot of them. I wish I had enough of these books. I mean, I got a lot of them. But they can go on our web. You can go on American Indian Movement website and they can get this whole book that you can read.
The web is?
AIM. It should be right on the back there.
AIM-IC.com?
Yep. And then go to the AIM Interpreter Center, too. And they can get everything will be on there. Our whole history is on it. But our short-term address was to establish a program to better the Indian housing problem, establish a program directed toward Indian youth, establish a positive program for the employment of Indian Americans, establish a program to educate industry in the Indian culture and its effect on the Indians, establish a program to improve the communications between Indians and non-Indians in the community, and establish a program to educate the Indian in his responsibility to his community. Long range was to generate unification with Indian people, to inform all Indian Americans, community, and local elders, to encourage Indian Americans to become active in community affairs, to bring the economic status of Indian Americans up to that of white America. And we've accomplished every one of them. And we work every day. No matter what you struggle for, if you get what you want, you got to work every day to keep it.
Sure.
I tell people never to look back because they're there. And if you take the time to look back, they'll run right over you. So that's my word when I speak it. I've spoken all over the world, you know, colleges, universities, you name it. I've been there. And I'm still there today. Just like everybody else, this is my home. This is where I was born. I was born in Elba Lake. And my family, out of seven sisters and four more brothers beside myself, 12 of us, there's only me and my sister Judy left. And she lives over there by Snyder Lake. And I still come up to see her. I'm very concerned what's happening here when this amendment, changing the Constitution and who's going to be a member and all that. I've supported everything that Irma and her council and her people that she's been visiting with for years, with what they have done. And I think if we don't do that, it's just a matter of maybe two or three more generations, only 25 years.
Right.
So three generations, the way I look at it, maybe less than that, three generations, 75 years, there will no longer be a White Earth.
So you do support the blood quantum, the prerequisite? You do support
this? I perform the fact that if you have a grandfather and grandmother that are from here, that's all you need. That's the eligibility.
And that's why you foresee the Native community being there during the seven generations and farther.
Well, if we don't do that, we're going to be gone here in the next 75 years. When our grandfathers, who were chiefs, who were our traditional leadership, every treaty that they made, every treaty, they talked about seven generations from now. In the prophecies, I've been all over America and Canada and all over the world. I've been in sweat lodges and Yippee and Weepee ceremony, spirit ceremony. Everywhere I've gone, they talk about the American Indian movement. They said that five generations after the past treaty was made, they talked about all the things that were going to happen from generation. The whole churches coming in and the boarding schools and the language and being sent away and kidnapped. My mom was spent 9 years in the boarding school, never allowed to go home. My father sent way out. They always send you far away where you couldn't run away to get even home. So hundreds and thousands of our children ran away and froze to death trying to get back home. And that was to do what they have done successfully, strip us of our culture and traditional way of life, traditional form of government. This IRA, Indian Railways Act, it's just a little baby. It's not been around long, but if you look how it's designed and what it does with the blood quantum, they're wiping us out. And I don't know how the Minnesota Chippewa tribe can stand by and allow that to happen. Red Lake, who is not a part of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe, they're separate. They are going through the same thing that we're talking about here today. Ned Lake, my good friend Kevin Lisi, who was a student, by the way, at the Red Schoolhouse. That's where he got his start. He is going through the same thing. They realize that if they let it go the way it is, that it's 1/4. My wife is from Wisconsin. She's on Anishinaabe. I'm on Anishinaabe here from White Earth. My children have to make a decision where they're going to be, but they're only 1/4, all right? They wouldn't recognize them here, but she went to Bad River, where she's from, and they recognize them there. My children should be recognized for me. I'm their father. I'm their grandpa.
Right.
I am their grandpa. And they should be recognized here. Now, if those children turn around and marry, the 1/4, fall in love with some girl, Caucasian, they're done. Their children are done. That's how close we are to termination. And the government is behind it all.
Yep.
The government's dictating the policies, and it should be simple for people to understand that. I saw this article on Anishinaabe today where the two lawyers wrote response to all the questions that people had. I think they did a tremendous job in educating. Communication is so important. And when I found out they put a gag order, basically on Irma, that really upset me.
Because then people weren't getting educated.
Utmost of disrespect that I can see, especially a woman, to do it to a woman. That's like doing that to my own mother. My mother can go in and say something. They, you got to shut up. I don't want you talking anymore. I don't want you telling people the truth anymore. That's what they're really saying. That's Nazi Germany. That's what Adolf Hitler did. Kept everybody stupid and everything. And out next thing you know, he's herding hundreds and thousands, 5 million people into boxcars and taking them out someplace to gas them all. Years ago, I said, we don't have to worry about the federal government terminating us. We're terminating ourselves. And people got to realize that, and they got to think about their children, children's, children's, children. And if they don't think that way, we're going to be all done.
Right, we're not giving the earth back to our kids. We're just borrowing the earth from our children, I believe.
Yeah.
And so we need to take care of that. So AIM has been on this movement for the past 48 years to basically extinguish what the boarding school process has done, and successfully. You have many different chapters, is that right?
We have many chapters, but when the knee ended, we went to court. The longest court hearing in the criminal history of the United States government against Indian people. And every day of that trial, Larry Leventhal, one of seven attorneys that handle our cases, his job alone was to bring the treaty in every day, Treaty of 1868, the Sioux Treaty, because the women and children that were being murdered and raped out there. They didn't have basements to hide when the gunslingers would come by. Dickie Wilson's goon squad would come by and shoot up the houses. They lived in trailer houses out there. They're the ones that called us. They're the ones we respond to. I'm the person that led the people in the Wounded Knee peacefully. We picked Wounded Knee because it was the scene of the last major massacre in America. And we were going to hold that village until the White House responded to us, United States government responded to us. And they dropped leaflets on us from helicopters telling us we had to be out of there by 6 o'clock the next night. They're coming in, get all the women, children, the religious leaders, the town. There's 56 families lived there. And when they wanted them all to vacate their homes and leave there because they're going to come in and wipe us out. It was under J. Edgar Hoover's master plan to eliminate all public dissent in America. And he tested it against Indian people. It's called Operation Garden Plot. Without congressional approval or presidential approval, he brought in all the armed forces. It's illegal.
Yeah.
The judge ruled that. The judge ruled illegal use of military force, illegal search and seizure, and all that. And the judge condemned Justice. Who do you think you are that you can bring in armed forces anywhere in the world without congressional or presidential approval? Against the very same people that welcomed you here. He said, it's not the Indian people that are guilty here, it's the United States government. He said, the rivers of justice have been muddied in my courtroom for 9.5 months, and I refused to allow it to go any further, and he threw out all the charges. I was facing 3 life terms plus 300 years in prison.
For just standing up for your rights.
I didn't know which one I was going to do first. We knew then that they were never going to listen to our treaties, all right? So we called the elders, people asked us to formulate a treaty council. And we held it out in Standing Rock, and 96 tribes, just the traditional leadership, not the RBCs, not the tribal council, the traditional leadership showed up. And they were so excited, so pleased with what was happening, they told the American Indian women, we got to go to Geneva, all right? Now, other Indian organizations, the Iroquois Confederacy, everybody's tried that. Everybody has failed. Tribal Chairman Association, tribal governments have failed all over America. We went there. Within 2 years, we were given non-government organizational status. We have a picture here in the booklet toward the end. This is the Six Nations Iroquois Confederacy. This is Indian people from all over the world that dared to go there and testify. People came there from all over Central and South America with masks on because they were in political exile. They had to hide their face because if the dictators that are supported by this government, El Salvador, Guatemala, and all these places found out they were there criticizing their government, their family would be wiped off the next day. There are over 200,000 people in Guatemala alone that are missing today. They can't even find them. They drop them in volcanoes, take them out in the ocean when they speak out against their government. And the United States government is the one that funds all that. All right. So they knew they had to silence the American Indian movement. Their plan was to wipe us out. And the judge told him that was illegal. The rivers of justice had been muddied and threw it out. All right, we gained United Nations recognition. And because it was no longer the American Indian Movement or the Anishinaabe or the Dakota, we were representing all Native people all over the world, indigenous people all over the world. And we put together what is called the Permanent Forum on the Rights of Indigenous People of the World and had ceremonies, a meeting 3 or 4 times a year with adults. More people start coming. Sawmills from way up in Norway. People up in the Bering Straits, you know, people in Russia.
Indigenous people.
Come from all over, way down in the Congo. After 30 years, we passed what's called the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People in the World. The only ones that didn't vote on it was the United States government, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. That was done in September of 2007. Now, Australia voted in favor of it now. New Zealand voted in favor of it. Canada voted in favor of it. And Obama was the last one to sign that document.
He did sign it.
So guess what? Now we represent over 365 million indigenous people worldwide. That's the power of a community when you get together and start planning and doing things together. A little grassroots organization, mostly women and children, who are crying out for help right here in their own land, came to us, and we backed and supported them and still support them today. The women are the ones that are marching in the front lines against the racism in sports and media. November 2nd, I had over 6,000 people. Nobody could believe it. The mayor, the police, when I was telling them I was going to bring 6,000 people, a lot of them were kind of smiling in the background. But we brought over 6,000, the biggest demonstration in history.
To Minneapolis.
And I put the women and children right up front, right up front. I said, you're going to lead this from now on. We're going to focus all our attention on our elders and our women and our children. And I want you to lead this march. And when I got up three blocks away, I looked back, and the street and the sidewalks on both sides were completely filled. And there was women singing out in front, singing Madewan song, singing Roundette song. And we took over, and every tribe, now listen to this, every tribe here in the state of Minnesota, 2 hours before the march, came out in the Sunday paper, signed by Charlie Vig, Whiter, Irma Visner, Kevin Lisi. First time that all the Dakota tribes and the Ojibwe tribes came together. And the National Indian Gaming Association, Ernie Stevens, and all the heads of the NAACP, all the national congressmen, everybody was there. Nobody's ever been able to do that in history. The American Indian Movement has done that. You know, it's the most powerful march in history, you know. And all of this documentation is in that book that I gave to you, the National Coalition Against Racism in Sports and Media.
And if our listeners want to check out this booklet more, they can go to www.aim-ic.com.
Great. And if they want to check out, there's a letter coming out that's already shaking a few. They can go in the circlenewspaper.org.
Thecirclenewspaper.org.
And wow. They can read this letter here, but it's out today. There might be a couple bundles coming up here for the meeting tomorrow. This will be passed out. And it's an interview of myself and the new Secretary Treasurer, Ms. Mason, and Irma's in there. And we're going to continue to put this kind of information out. We are the Whiters, Circle for Survival Tribal Council. That doesn't mean we're going to undermine or try to undermine in any way current Tribal Council. Organizations to educate people how important this is and how important we get behind it. And don't worry about any people going to come and take away the housing, because I think the housing list is going to be a long way toward dealing with the people right here. We're not going to take care of your health service. We have health services in all these urban areas today through the movement. There's no jobs to take away. We're going to stay there and work where we're at. So all these little fears that they have, they shouldn't have that. And we're going to help them, because we know how to do it, develop economic here. We're going to join in that effort. We know how to do that. We went with the top corporation in America, and we want to help. We want to strengthen this school. We want to strengthen the language program. In Minneapolis, they got a program called BADOT. They start kindergarten through three, and they're taught the Dakota and Ojibwe. I had a little boy come up to me the other day. He was 7 years old. He counted to 20. In the Anishinaabe language and Canada 20, and the Dakota language. He knows both of them.
Wow.
And he sang a song, a traditional song about the ABCs to me. I couldn't believe. But you know what? This is what the grandfather said. This is prophecy. We're living in prophecy. They talked about our conditions when the movement formed. Everything was taken from us, and a new people would stand up. And every one of the ceremonies I've been to, they said there was a movement. Stood up and say, we want back what was ours. We don't want Minneapolis or New York and all these polluted cities. We just want the land and what goes with it, the hunting, fishing, wildlife, blueberries, everything that's on it. We want to protect that. That's who we are. That's the American Indian Movement. And we're going to join in this struggle for survival, and with other families that feel just like we do. But how I feel today, I want to help them economic development. I have 40 acres of land up in Chinwatana State Forest. When I tell people that, they don't believe it. I've taken people up and showed them it. Right in the middle, I had a guy give me this land, and I'm going to make a commitment. I already put it out. I'm turning those 40 acres of land over to the Whiter Anishinaabe Nation. And they're going to join forces with Mille Lacs and Leech Lake and the other reservations where they're having the like problems with alcohol and drugs and fetal alcohol and fetal heroin now, babies being born. I want them, as long as they can guarantee me that they're going to build a culturally-based, spiritual treatment program, that land is there. It sits right in the middle of a beautiful state forest. It's the only private land there. They'll have privacy there. We can get them away from the drug, get them away from the alcohol and the gangs and all that kind of stuff and help them.
And educate them in the traditional ways.
Educate them and help them.
Yep.
I'm going to make that commitment. I already made it. It's going to be in the paper, and I'm going to make that commitment to the tribal council here and challenge them. And that's the only prerequisite. They develop a culture, spiritually based treatment program for our children and the unborn generations to come.
Clyde, I've said wow many times in this interview just because you have done so much for so many people, not just people today, but people in hundreds of years from now. You've made such a change.
It's not just me. You know, we got people that think like I do, and we work with them. I've become a spokesperson over the years. I go out and speak and do all this stuff, but I never let them forget. It's the people, the Anishinaabe people that stood with us and still stand with us today.
The American Indian Movement is such a wonderful organization and ever-growing and will be changing the lives of many for now and the future.
That's our responsibility, our job. And the government's not going to do it. White European education is not going to do it. And organized religion. Now, when I say organized religion, I'm not talking about Christianity here. People believe in Jesus Christ and walk in his footsteps and do his work, and they're going to be a great friend of mine. I'm talking about these people that go on TV and they're holding a little girl in dumps in Guatemala in their arms, there's bloomers on, all filthy and dirty. You can see all these other kids digging through the garbage to get something to eat. And if you send $21, they'll take care of this child for a month. I'm talking about that. And that's all we see is churches getting hired in the glass, they're turning in the glass, and our people are still digging through the dumps, and our people are still sleeping in the alleys in the very shadow of that church. I'm talking about that kind of organized religion.
I hear you.
I've been to the whole World Council of Churches. I was invited to the first indigenous people of the whole Western Hemisphere on the 24th of 1974, Christmas, right, the day before Christmas, to testify. When I told them about what brought us to Wounded Knee, a lot of the ministers from South Dakota got up and spoke out against me. Other ministers got up and said that it's much worse than what Mr. Belker's talking about. The deaths and the injustice to Indian people. Pretty soon they were all fighting one another, and I'm sitting back, listen. You know, we went through the Minnesota Council of Churches. The first thing we did when we formed, they had what they call the Minnesota Council of Churches Division of Indian Work. But there was no Indian there. There was no Indian people represented on their board. There's no Indian people working there. Today, the Division of Indian Work has a brand new building in Minneapolis on Lake Street, and there's all Indian people working there. They got some of the most prestigious programs anywhere in America. The churches have to do that kind of work. That's their responsibility. And I found out through my own investigation that the American Lutheran Church alone, there's three synods within the Lutheran Church. The American Lutheran Church was handling over 1,400 adoptions of Indian children a year. Now that's 33 other denominations that do that. So where are our kids? Our children are scattered all over the world. They don't even know from whence. A lot of them don't even know they're Indian.
They're lost, and they don't know who they are.
When the Legal Rights Center was formed, that's why we formed. Not just to handle criminal issues, but to deal with parental determination of rights. They call it parental determination. I call it parental termination of rights. And we're the ones that are responsible for putting together the Indian Child Welfare Act. See, a lot of people don't know that.
I didn't know
that. In America, they look at us a bunch of militants and radicals. You're damn right I'm militant. You're damn right I'm radical. And I was certified by Judge Peoples here in 1949 as being incorrigible. And I am incorrigible, and I'll be incorrigible the rest of my life until things get better for our people and our children and unborn generations to come.
Thank you, Clyde, for all your fighting, your activism, for all you do for the people and for our land here.
This George Preston, the original owner of the Redskins, said he would never integrate his team. It took him 22 years after the National Football League told him he had to integrate his team. He said, I'll never allow a black person on my team. Before I do that, I'll have an Oriental or a Mongolian. He said, maybe I'll just put a woman on my team because they're playing like a bunch of little sissies anyway. So 22 years later, he starts integrating because he's forced to. And before he did that, the American Nazi Party, which he belongs to, and this is the history of him, marched outside the stadium telling him, George Preston Marshall, don't allow black, dark people on the team.
That's not right.
Then he had Doug Williams came to town, his quarterback, finally came to town when they played the Buffalo Bills in Minneapolis. We demonstrated there, and he threw 4 touchdown passes. And the next year, he gave him a $55 million increase in his pay to be a quarterback for the team. They're all right now because they're making money for him. You know?
Sure.
Where the Redskin name came from. It was all the way back to the scalping. When they scalping, they had blood run down their face and their clothes and put them on their pelts and put them in their little pouch and then turn them in and get their bounty. They didn't know our name, Ronnie Shinobi and all that. And they would just say, oh, they're just a bunch of Redskins. They prove it by the blood.
That's not right.
So this is the history that's in it, and this is what we're giving out all over America.
Where can our listeners get this information?
Yeah, it's all in there. It's in that booklet.
We Are a People, Not Your Mascots.
Yeah.
And then you can go to notyourmascots.org for more information.
Yeah, not your mascots anymore.
Well, I guess we're going to end this, Clyde, and thank you so much for sharing all this information with people and educating and all your effort. Thank you for your time today. If you'd like to hear more, feel free to visit www.nijiradio.org.
Funding for this program has been made possible through a grant from the Legacy, Art, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.